couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the Super Mario Brothers movie, Air, Paint, Chupa, and On a Wing and a Prayer. I'm also going to be talking about news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring Rick and Morty Season 6. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Let's quickly look at the box office. You had Dungeons & Dragons, Honor Among Thieves, top the box office with $37 million, and that's not bad for what a Dungeons & Dragons movie they figured it was going to do. Now, the big thing that's going to be the testing ground for this is not just overseas, but how much legs it has. So that's yet to be seen. I mean, midweek, the Super Mario Brothers movie opened, and it had $32 million just on its Wednesday opening, but that was in spring break, and that was a bunch of kids. We'll see how front-loaded that is. We'll see how it does throughout the coming weekends. In number two was John Wick with $28 million, which is a pretty good hold for a movie like that, being the fourth in the series. His Only Son, which was the latest faith-based movie, which is about Abraham and Isaac, that came in third with $5.5 million leading into Holy Week. But the real thing I want to talk about in the news segment today is this news about a Harry Potter reboot. If you haven't been following the chaos that's been going on at Warner Brothers Studios, which is now Warner Brothers Discovery, they're trying to merge and separate at the same time all of their products. Because that's one of the things you have a problem when you get a conglomerate so big as an entertainment thing that it has all these different pieces to it. And in the process, they're dumping a bunch of projects and properties that they don't think are making the money or don't have as much promise. And they're simultaneously mining the properties that they think they can really make some money on. And Harry Potter was a juggernaut in the early part of the 21st century. It was the movie. It replaced Star Wars as the defining a generation. I mean, a lot of millennials grew up with Harry Potter. And once those movies wrapped up about 10 years ago, they wanted to do more. So they started to do these Fantastic Beasts movies, and they have not done as well. Mainly because Fantastic Beasts movies are more told for an adult audience, a grown-up audience, not an adult. It wasn't like pornography. But it's made with grown-up themes, and it's not necessarily appealing to the children. And I think the thinking behind that was that would be a natural progression. You grew up with the Harry Potter movies, and then the grown-ups are going to want to see the Fantastic Beasts movies. But those never really clicked in America. They've done better overseas. But even now, they're not this billion-dollar franchise. And so they want to reboot Harry Potter. Well, there's some pushback on that. First of all, they're saying we're going to make it a TV series, and each season is going to be one of the books. And I've heard both sides of it, because I've heard some people say, hey, this looks really interesting. There's a whole bunch of stuff they never explored in the books. They didn't have time to. They want to explore that, and I understand the people who love the Wizarding World, I can see where that is a big deal. But I've also heard people say, wait, why are you remaking these? The last one just came out a decade ago. It reminds me of when they were redoing the Spider-Man movies. When they did Sam Raimi's Spider-Man, and then they did the ones with Mark Webb that starred Andrew Garfield, and a lot of the comments were, why are you doing new Spider-Man movies telling the exact same stories? We just did these. And I think that played out in the box office. The Harry Potter stories have been told. The Harry Potter character, he's had his arc. It'd be like trying to remake Star Wars in 1987. It just doesn't seem to make sense. But because that's the most historically well-done property, they want to redo that. But here's another problem that they're running into. And I know that there are going to be people who fall one side or the other on this. But J.K. Rowling has launched herself into the culture wars. She's in a turf war, if you pardon the pun. She has spoken out about the trans community. She has some very strong views on the trans community, and she's not backing down on them. The problem is, a lot of the comments she says certainly comes off as transphobic and anti-trans, and she hasn't backed down from that. Part of it is they're trying to reboot the Harry Potter franchise because they want to get the Gen Zs and the next generation into this. But they're not having it with J.K. Rowling and her trans comments. And so they're pushing back, and they're pushing back hard. And at least my opinion of how I'm reading the tea leaves here is you're not going to have as much success if she's involved, because you're going to get such pushback and rejection from the community. You will not be able to promote this or talk about it or have any sort of conversation about this without addressing those issues. And that's J.K. Rowling's fault. And she's doubling down on it. She's even got an entire podcast about it now. And I'm just like, good Lord, take away her Twitter account or she's going to bury herself. You can agree with her 100%, but there's a lot of people who don't. And that's people who vote with their checkbook. And that's people who won't go see the movie and won't watch a new TV series. And I think they're being very short-sighted about this, because if you listen to her podcast, some of the things she's like, oh, no, I'm being misunderstood. I'm actually saying this. And then she kind of just says what she'd said before in a new way. She just needs to shut up about it and back off. And not only that, you've got the actors who were in the movies, especially Daniel Radcliffe and Rupert Grint and Emma Watson, who've come out and condemned her comments. And I'm like, now you're just dragging everybody in there. So this is a great lesson to anybody. If you want to get into a culture war, you got to understand what that culture war is going to do to your popularity, especially if your popularity is so mainstream that it gets everybody from every different corner of politics. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first trailer I want to talk about is Barbie, which is coming to theaters on July 21st.
Hi, Barbie.
Hi, Barbie.
Hi, Barbie.
Hi, Barbie.
Hi, Barbie.
Hi, Barbie.
Ugh.
Hi, Ken.
Hi, Ken.
Put the radio fast and goes cruising just as fast as she can now.
I thought I might stay over tonight.
Why?
Because we're girlfriend boyfriend.
To do what?
I'm actually not sure.
What are you doing here?
I'm coming with you.
Did you bring your rollerblades?
I literally go nowhere without them.
Look, I think this movie looks fantastic. It looks beautiful. It has some real energetic stuff going on. But you know what? I still have no idea what the story is. I have no idea what the story is, and this thing comes out in 2.5 months. And I'm not talking about something like it's a one that's under lock and key. It's not like the next Marvel movie that's supposed to be all spoilery. It's not like you're doing the next Star Wars film. It's Barbie. I think the big question everybody had from the beginning was, is there going to be a story? And I have yet to see one. So as much fun as they look like they're having with this, I have no idea what this is about, but I'm not sold on it. The next one I want to talk about is Blue Beetle, which is coming to theaters on August 18th.
What is going on?
I just want to run.
It's called the Scarab. It's some kind of world-destroying weapon. It's designed to protect its host.
This ain't what you want.
Sometimes it does what you want, and sometimes it doesn't. The Scarab chose you, but it belongs to me.
The love you feel for your family makes you weak.
It's like Batman stuff.
Batman's a fascist.
I just want to rap.
This is going to be the follow-up to The Flash in the Warner Brothers superhero canon. And this movie doesn't look bad. I'm curious to see what they do, but I get a real feel of a second-rate movie. It doesn't even feel like it should be a movie. It feels like it's along the level of Ms. Marvel, to borrow from Disney and Marvel. I don't think Ms. Marvel would have made a great theatrical feature. I don't think it certainly wouldn't have made tons and tons of money. But I thought it was a perfectly fine TV series. There were a couple movies like this a couple years ago about a kid who had a robotic suit that was Max Steel or something like that. And that feels exactly like what this is. Now, I know a lot of people are freaking out about George Lopez at the end, and I threw that in there. And he's like, Batman's a fascist. He's not a fascist. Well, I mean, depending on from your perspective, you might think that, and that's a joke. He certainly takes all of the billions of Bruce Wayne and protects himself and solves things with his own technology rather than developing a system to, like, feed the poor. Anyways, coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about Air and Chupa.
Mm-hmm.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews and talk about Air. Ben Affleck directs this true story of a struggling athletic shoe company that bets the farm to sign Michael Jordan as a spokesman for the NBA.
Our basketball division is terrible.
I do not love it.
You ask me what I do here. This is what I do. I find you players, and I feel it this time. Yeah, okay, it's risky. When you were selling sneakers out of the back of your Plymouth, that was risky. Don't change that now.
For a rookie?
Yes.
Who's never set foot on an NBA court.
That's the literal definition of rookie, yeah.
What's the plan? We build a shoe line around just him.
I need the greatest basketball shoe that's ever been made.
Who's the player?
Michael Jordan.
This also stars Ben Affleck. I mean, it's been a while since he's directed a movie, and I think he's actually a really good director. I was looking forward to the day that he was going to actually direct his own Batman movie. But such is life, that's not going to happen. One of the things that I can say about Ben Affleck as a director is his stuff is very accessible. His stuff is easy to watch. He's the cinematic equivalent of an easy read in a book. You ever pick up a book and it's tough to get through? You know, Stephen King is very easy to read. You can sit there and read 300 pages and you'd be like, gosh, I didn't realize I read that. As opposed to reading something like the original Dracula, which is a bit of a slog to get through. I mean, it's a neat book, but whew, it's tough to read at times. Now, I'm going to warn you, I'm not a sports fan. I mean, I know who Michael Jordan is, but I don't think I've ever watched an entire basketball game on TV. I've been to a couple basketball games, but I've never been to an NBA game. I don't care about basketball. I just don't care. I colossally don't care, and I'm not good at it. But I understand how important it is, especially for Nike, as an athletic shoe company. And back in the day, it was known as like a runner's shoe rather than a basketball shoe. So this story tells sort of like that underdog attempt. And Matt Damon plays the guy in the office who thinks he can sign Jordan. And he's the one who comes up with the idea. And of course, that's going to be very expensive. And they're putting all their eggs in one basket. And now you look at it, you know, knowing where Michael Jordan went, you're like, well, who wouldn't have made this? Well, it wasn't an easy call back then. There's a lot of stars in college sports who never break through in professional. Or there's some that something happens to them. Maybe they get injured. Who knows? There's no way to guarantee that Michael Jordan was going to be as good of a basketball player for as long as he was in the NBA. A myriad of things could happen. This tells that underdog story. And I saw it like the day after I watched Tetris. If you remember that film from last week, that was the one about the guy trying to get the rights to Tetris so he can put it on the Game Boy. And it is the same kind of story. It's this underdog, one guy who's betting the farm and really leverages his whole career and life on it. And then, of course, we all know the story, how it plays out. So it's fun watching this guy survive and win. Now, of course, for any of these inspirational stories, there's thousands of them that don't work. So don't go out there trying to do something stupid in your job. But it's a well-done movie. Affleck is very good at doing his movies. He's a very good director. And you get behind the characters. And look, like I said, I don't care about sports. And I certainly don't care about the NBA. But I got into the movie. And that, to me, is a special thing. There are some sports movies that you have to love sports to like the movie. The movie The Natural is such a great story. You don't have to like baseball to watch it. Remember the Titans is more about the people than it is about football. And those are important type of movies to do. That's what makes a sports movie. The business of shoes is super boring to me, but they made it work. And it pushes all the right buttons. It's got the great 80s soundtrack. It does feel like it was shot in the 80s. And it gets a little button push. It gets a little silly, especially at the end where they're like wrapping it up and giving people their notice and due. I'm just like, okay, quit heaping praise on how great the folks at Nike were. I mean, but it's a neat little movie. It's fun and it's a crowd pleaser. Breezy and fun. It breaks out all the standard sports theme tropes, but it still gets held back a bit by some based on the true story cliches. Still, I'm going to have to say that Air rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Chupa. This is on Netflix. It's a feature film. A child visiting his family in Mexico discovers a baby chupacabra and tries to protect it from those trying to exploit the creature.
What is it?
Chupacabra.
Well, what about we call him Chupa?
You know Chupa means sucker, right?
Chupa. He'll be our little secret.
Don't worry. I'm going to take care of you.
There are some bad people out there who want to take advantage of these creatures.
I know you saw it.
We have to get him out of here. Let's go, we gotta go!
Whoa, whoa!
Are you sure you know how to drive?
First of all, if you don't know what a chupacabra is, it's this sort of cryptid character. A cryptid is some sort of creature that no one's proved exists. Loch Ness Monster, Bigfoot, the Mothman, these are all cryptids. And the chupacabra comes from Mexico, and its name literally means the goat sucker, because they would find these goats that had their blood drained from them from a wound. And supposedly people have taken pictures or gotten video of chupacabras. But it's this mythical or maybe mythical creature that's roaming the deserts of Mexico and the southwest of America. There's an X-Files episode on the chupacabra. And this one tells a story about this kid. The kid lives in Kansas City, and his father had died of cancer, and he's going down to Mexico to visit his grandfather and his cousins. So most of it takes place in this small little town in Mexico, out in the desert. But ultimately, it's like a Mexican version of an Amblin film. A Mexamblin film, if you will. It's got all those elements to it. It's got the kids, because he's there with his two cousins, and one of them doesn't speak English. Well, the other one does. He doesn't speak Spanish terribly well, but they still get along, and they understand each other, and they find this chupacabra, and the chupacabra is adorable. The chupacabra is kind of like this in this movie. It's almost like this wildcat with wings, which is absurd, but, and, you know, the real chupacabra is not nearly as adorable, or the real, and I put that in air quotes. So Chupa is a story about this kid trying to help out this abandoned, orphaned chupacabra, while there's this guy who's played by Christian Slater, who's this scientist working for a tech company that wants to get the secrets to the chupacabra because somehow its blood's supposed to heal everything. I don't know. I mean, I don't know how they know that, but, you know, that's the whole point. But what's funny is they play his character, the Christian Slater character, off like a devious Alan Grant from Jurassic Park. And that's a kind of an interesting choice. It's kind of weird to see the archaeologist be the bad guy, but it works. And Damien Bashir is in it. He plays a grandfather. You know what I love about Damien Bashir in this? Is this is just a silly little kids movie, but he gives it his all. He throws down and he acts his guts out. He doesn't. He's like, I was nominated for an Oscar and I'm still going to do this movie and I'm going to have fun with it. Because he plays the grandfather who has a bit of dementia, and he used to be a professional wrestler, because, of course, Mexican wrestling was big in Mexico. Go figure. But it's a cute little movie. I enjoyed it. It's something it's more for like a 10-year-old, but it's something you can watch with the family. It's cute. It's got the flavor of the South of the Border Amblin movie aimed at kids, which makes some of the more cliched elements forgivable. I'm going to have to say that Chupa kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, we've got the Super Mario Brothers movie and Paint. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews. First of all, I do apologize, though, as you can hear my raspy Demi Moore sexy voice. I've got a bit of a cold, so bear with me. I'm going to have a bit of a rasp going on. I'm going to sound like Roz from Monsters Incorporated. So yeah, forgive me if my voice cracks like Peter Brady. Anyways, let's move on with the movies. I've got the Super Mario Brothers movie. This video game adaptation sees a lowly plumber try to save Princess Peach and the Mushroom Kingdom from the dastardly Bowser.
Not sure if you know who I am, but I'm about to rule the world.
Wow,
But there's one problem. There's a human, has a mustache, just like you.
Do you think I know every human being with a mustache wearing an identical outfit with a hat with the letter of his first name on it? Because I don't!
Bowser is coming. Together, we are going to stop that monster.
First of all, you cannot talk about a Super Mario Brothers movie without mentioning that dumpster fire that they made back in the 90s. And I remember when that movie came out with Bob Hoskins and John Leguizamo, they were expecting that to be the big movie because it had dinosaurs in it. This was the 90s. Now dinosaurs are like, who cares? We see a movie with dinosaurs in it every couple weeks. But back then, they thought it was going to be a huge movie, and it flopped. It flopped so hard, and there's good reason it flopped. I went and rewatched it recently because I happened to have the Riff Trax version of it, which is honestly the only sane way to watch that movie. It's like they took elements from the movie and said, we're going to reproduce these ineffectively and not at all like how they are in the movie. And then we're going to film it with live action and some terrible CGI and some even worse practical effects. So they waited, gosh, what is it, like 30 years? And now they're redoing the Super Mario Brothers movie. And in this one, it's CGI animated. It's and they make it look like the Mario characters. Now, obviously, there's been a lot of evolution in terms of the look of Mario from the 8-bit version to modern Mario games. But everything looks like the characters from the game, which is good. And they've actually got a pretty good voice cast. Unfortunately, none of them are real standouts. Charlie Day's funny as Luigi. And I know Chris Pratt's getting a lot of well-publicized side eye for his portrayal of Mario, mainly because his portrayal of Mario's, well, it's terrible. I mean, he's okay doing it, but it's like he's trying to do a voice and like doing like 1% of that voice. I heard somebody describe it as, it's as if Chris Pratt was imitating Rocket Raccoon pretending to be Mario. And that's exactly what it sounds like. Now, Jack Black's pretty good as Bowser. And Anna Taylor-Joy, she's fine as Princess Peach. So they have some good voice actors in it. It's just not much to it in terms of the cast. No one's a real standout. And I think a lot of people were hoping this was going to be like the Lego movie, because the Lego movie transcended generations. You know, you had people in their 60s who played with Legos. And they loved the Lego movie. At the time the Lego movie came out, I was in my mid-40s and I'd played with Legos. I love the Lego movie. It was irreverent. It was different. It made jokes that went over kids' heads. This one doesn't. This one is 100% a kids' movie. That's nothing wrong with that. I mean, it's a silly little cartoon. It doesn't give you much more than that. The story is very basic. You know, Mario's got to go defeat Bowser. Jack Black as Bowser does a decent job, but then they can kind of sideline him half the time. And they have to make him sing, which annoys me. Every single movie that has Jack Black, unless it's The Mandalorian, has to make him sing. I know he likes doing that. Fine if you're doing School of Rock, but, you know, if they remake Schindler's List with Jack Black, he's going to end up singing in it. So, the Super Mario Brothers movie, the writing's not great. It's way better than that original one from the 90s, but it's still not that great. It's very two-dimensional, even though it's 3D animated. I mean, the animation's cool, and actually the way they incorporate all the little bits and bobs from the game is actually kind of cool. And there's a ton of Easter eggs, way more than I have any sort of experience to catch. But so many people have blown hours and hours and hours just trying to get through that one level that they can relate to it. And it's breezy, and I mean, it moves, and it's not meant to be heavy. I did enjoy it. If my kids were younger, I could see myself watching it with them and having a great time. But I'm kind of beyond a movie like this, but I don't dislike it. It's way more true to the game than that 90s abomination, but it's still just a silly cartoon, mostly for kids. But it'll keep them occupied for a couple hours, and I guess that's the point. I'm going to be nice and say the Super Mario Brothers movie kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about paint. This satire of Bob Ross and his popularity sees a PBS painter struggling with other artists and his ego at a local station.
I'm always moving forward, just on to the next.
Don't let fame bring out the worst in you.
I want to taste the cheese.
How is everything?
It's good.
Good, thank you.
Great, thank you.
Hi, friends, and welcome to Paint with Ambrosia.
It takes paint to a whole new place.
You're entitled to your favorite TV show. It's what makes this country great.
Now, I'm not Bob Ross's biographer, but I know enough about him to have known his very inspiring yet sometimes tragic elements of his life. And I've always loved Bob Ross. I remember there was a woman I knew when I was in college. I was working at a campground, and she was an art student. And I made a comment about Bob Ross, and she went on a tear about him. Oh, he's awful, blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, what's wrong with Bob Ross? He's like, well, he makes pretty pictures, but if all you want to do is make pretty pictures, that's great. And I'm like, what's wrong with making pretty pictures? You know, what's wrong with doing landscapes? And of course, for her, you know, a person studying art, you got to get into the mind and the psyche, and that's fine. I mean, there's a place for that. But some people just want a nice landscape on their wall. And I thought Bob Ross made it accessible. And Bob Ross also challenged you to how he had a bravery test that he would do on his thing where he would splash paint on a finished or near finished work and then have to figure out a way to incorporate that. So there's stuff really inspiring about him. And they take that and they add it to this character of Carl Nargle, who is who Owen Wilson plays in this movie. And of course he's Bob Ross because he's got the hair and he does the exact kind of paintings. But the key is that Carl, he can really only paint one thing. And I mean, they kind of take it to an absurd level, but it also shows his vulnerability and it shows his weaknesses in terms of he liked the ladies, we'll say. Now, we, of course, lost Bob Ross early in his life. He was only 52 or something like that when he died. And this isn't meant to be his story. This kind of just takes more or less his image and him as an icon. It's more about ego and whether you're making art and how to deal with that in that PBS station concept. Now, most people haven't worked at a PBS station, haven't set foot in a PBS station. I've not really either. I've done some NPR work and stuff like gone on been guests on NPR shows. So I've gone into NPR for that, our local NPR affiliate. So I can tell the difference between that and a commercial radio station. And I imagine TV stations are similar to that. Now, it feels like it should have been taking place in the 80s, which is when Bob Ross was doing his show. But it's still kind of warm and inviting. So it has this, it feels like it would have been made back then. It feels like there's this flavor to like these 90s independent films that are very, very quirky, but very, very dry. And you have to like that sort of thing. And if you don't, you're going to hate this movie. It's this weird, quirky, not mainstream at all movie. That's why it's put out by IFC. But I enjoy that kind of thing. I enjoy the awkward humor where you get the laughs when nobody's saying anything. That's the kind of stuff I like. And it's not deep or sensational or anything like that, but it's still kind of cool. I enjoyed it. You know, with the throwback style of the indie films from the 90s, this tongue-in-cheek dry comedy offers a clever look at people living up to their own fame. I'm going to say that paint kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
Coming up next on Fat Guys at the Movies, I'm going to be talking about On a Wing and a Prayer and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Rick and Morty Season 6. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with our movie reviews, and we're going to talk about On a Wing and a Prayer. Based on a true story, this film follows a family that must fly their chartered plane after the pilot dies of a heart attack.
Miami Center. Anyone there? I've got an emergency up here. My wife and daughters are on this plane.
I need you to stop a plane crash. You're the only person I know who can save them.
Has he flown a King Air?
Never.
Got a very tight window. How long has he been in the air?
Start easing off of those controls. Can you do that?
We got a real good co-pilot up here.
Landing gear down.
I got it. I'm looking for the emergency procedures.
No doubt we're going to need it.
This is available on Prime Video right now. And this stars Dennis Quaid and Heather Graham as the married couple. And here's the thing. It's a faith-based movie. And the director, Sean McNamara, he's done regular stuff. Like he did like the Even Stevens movie, and he's worked on regular films, but he's also done some faith-based stuff. And he's going to be directing, I think Dennis Quaid is going to be playing Reagan in his biopic of Reagan. So the two of them have worked together before. And what's weird about it, it's a weird faith-based movie because all the faith-based stuff is, most of it is put in as undertones, but it's not very subtle. Like there's a scene where these kids run through a house and it goes and it focuses on all the crosses on the wall. And there's like a line in there where somebody says, you just have to believe in something you can't see, when he's trying to explain to him about wind coming and hitting the plane, when the guy on the ground's on the phone telling him, he's like, you have to believe in something you can't see. And I'm like, that's a little on the nose, don't you think? Write a little more subtly. But ultimately, it's meant to be the survival adventure story about this family that has to figure out how to land a plane. It's actually based on a true story. Because what happened is on an Easter Sunday, they're coming back from a funeral and they chartered a plane from like somewhere in Florida to Louisiana. And then the pilot just dies. He has a heart attack. And Dennis Quaid's character had some flying experience, but only a couple hours in a Cessna. So he was by far not even close to being a licensed pilot and certainly didn't have the experience to do this. But you do what you got to do. And I like the idea. I think it's a great idea. But I think, in a weird way, that making it a faith-based movie, but then not making it a faith-based movie, it seems to get in the way at times. I mean, there's a scene there where, you know, where they're wanting to land and the mother goes back and prays with the kids. And I'm like, well, that could be in any kind of movie, really, because, you know, you're staring death in the face. A lot of people are going to pray no matter when the last time they went to church. But it feels like, I've always said this about faith-based movies, and this is one of the things where I remember when I talked about Jesus Revolution, one of the things I liked that Jesus Revolution did is it didn't fall into that trope. There are these tropes of, it feels very amateurish. Some of these faith-based movies just don't seem well made. And every now and then I see one that's actually really well made and I like to call it out. This one's not. It seems very corny and the writing is bad. I mean, the writing is terrible. I mean, it's laughable at some points. I mean, it's one of those things that I hope Riff Tracks does a version of this because of some of the lines they say to each other. And like the first 20 minutes of it takes place in, they're at a barbecue and they're trying to win a barbecue contest. And I'm like, what does this have to do with anything? There's no development of the plot until like half hours when they finally get in the plane. And then on top of it, they have so many different characters in here. Like they have one of the characters is this girl who loves flying. She's like 11 or something like that. And she's heard about the plane and she has a scanner and she hears it and she picks up on it. But she doesn't have any sort of, she doesn't affect the story in any way. She's really only there as an audience surrogate to explain some of the things to her friends so the audience understands as a layperson what it means. The other problem is every time that they say, oh, the pilot died and there's these people flying a plane and there's nobody else in there. And pretty much everybody who hears that is like, well, what am I supposed to do? They're dead. Might as well just let them drop from the sky. And I'm like, I don't think that would be the reaction. Maybe it is. Who knows? But it just seemed very cold and callous of the characters. And the characters didn't seem real to me, even if they're based on true story. And I don't know why they would make these characters feel so inauthentic. Because they were playing with tropes and cliches. And like there's a scene in there, like a part in there where one of the daughters eats a candy bar and it has nuts in it and she has a nut allergy. And so we have to have this whole thing where her sister's digging through the luggage to try and find her EpiPen. And I'm like, well, this has nothing to do with anything. And maybe that's true. Maybe that happened, but it just kind of gets in the way. The story's relatively simple. The guy's flying a plane and he's trying not to panic doing it. But every time he's just like, oh, he's a blubbering idiot. The pilot, and they're like to the point where he like doesn't even understand anything. And his wife sits in the seat next to him and she's like asking what this term means. And I'm like, have you not watched an episode of TV anywhere? I mean, you see this kind of stuff. If you've ever seen a movie about a plane, you know what an altimeter is. I don't know. It's with terrible writing and corny dialogue, it causes this otherwise inspiring story to stall in mid-flight. On a Wing and a Prayer sucks.
It sucks.
listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Today's spotlight is on Rick and Morty Season 6. I think this actually came out a week ago, but I had a delay in getting the product so I could review it. More misadventures by the smartest man alive, who is clearly insane, and his uneasy grandson.
Do not move!
Rick, are we about to die?
No, we're about to vanish from this reality.
That's totally dying.
No, it isn't.
There's an alien army shooting people. What am I doing?
It's a small group of alien terrorists. Just do a Die Hard.
What does that mean?
Sneak around, use air vents. Never seen Die Hard?
I'm 17. No, I've never seen Die Hard.
Well, neither did the guy in Die Hard, so you're nailing it.
Everybody in Rick's car!
No, Morty, wait!
Having a bit of trouble with your car, Sanchez?
Not now, Gene!
It's funny, I said this about Rick and Morty when I was reviewing the other seasons, the last couple seasons. I actually like Rick and Morty as a show. I find it interesting. I find it funny. I'm not a fan of the people who are fans of Rick and Morty. I mean, if you like Rick and Morty, that's fine. But there are some people that are obnoxious. Anyone who ever put Pickle Rick as their Twitter avatar, I'm annoyed with you. And I love the out there real sci-fi headiness of Rick and Morty, and the fact that it doesn't take itself seriously, but it also plays with some very realistic and serious and kind of mind-bending ideas. I think it is a visionary show, oftentimes done for just a dirty joke, but still, it's really good. The other thing that's interesting about this is you can't speak about Rick and Morty, sort of like how I talked earlier about J.K. Rowling. You can't talk about any new Harry Potter stuff without pulling her politics into it, and you can't talk about Rick and Morty without addressing the fact that Justin Roiland has been booted off the show for... Well, he had actual legal problems where he was accused of harassment, but that ended up falling through because there was not enough evidence. But I don't think Adult Swim's having him back, and they're allegedly going to recast his character, and they make a point to avoid talking about him at all in the behind the scenes stuff. You got a lot of interviews with Dan Harmon, you got a lot of interviews with the other writers, and I think it really shows that it's a huge team effort. There's a lot of people writing and working on this show. And Rick and Morty is so much more than Justin Roiland. And I think this is them very subtly trying to show you, hey, we still got this. We can do a season 7 and beyond if we want. And that's smart to do. Because you go back to some of the early seasons of Rick and Morty and the special features are just annoying. There's stuff that is just the guy screwing around and like, okay, these are jokes from the writer's room that you didn't put into the show because it wasn't good enough to reach the show. And there's a bunch of behind the scenes. There's interviews with the crew and they talk about how they actually had to put this together during COVID. So they did this whole season remotely, which is what's so interesting is you can do animation even in a distance environment, which is something to keep your mind on. So look, if you like Rick and Morty, you get more of this. I think some of the stories, they're trying to differentiate from the previous season. They're not trying to just retread old ground. They get rid of the portal gun in the beginning, or actually in the last season, they get rid of the portal gun. And that's a neat idea, but then they spend all this time explaining why they can't have the portal gun and why they can't escape with it, and they find other ways to get around anyways. It's sort of like when Doctor Who got rid of the sonic screwdriver because they thought it was something that just got them out of all the scrapes, and they found out he'd find something else to work with. So they brought back the sonic screwdriver. So Rick and Morty season 6 is fun. I mean, the new season manages to keep freshness, but it does fall into repetitive elements, especially when it's really trying new things. But still, I find it fun, and there's 10 episodes in the season, so it doesn't overstay its welcome. I'm going to say that Rick and Morty season 6 rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
That's it for this week. I need to go. Next week, I'm going to be talking about Renfield and the Pope's Exorcist. And until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.